Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Now, I want to talk to someone whose name you won't necessarily recognise, but has played a key role in some of the biggest movies of the last few decades. Dermot Power from County Waterford. He's been central to designing the look and feel of films such as Batman Begins, the Harry Potter series, Star Wars Episode 2, The Attack of the Clones, Alice in Wonderland, Charlie the Chocolate Factory, V for Vendetta, Christmas Carol, etc, etc. Dermot is a movie concept artist. That's right, a movie concept artist who has created some iconic characters and images for films. If you think of stuff like Buckbeat, the hippogriff from the Harry Potter, or indeed Harry's Firebolt Broomstick, or Queen Amidala costume, and all of those things from Star Wars Episode 2. That's got the hand of Dermot on it, basically. Well, he's with me now. So, Dermot, first things first, I have to ask, what exactly, because I did say it twice, and that means I don't necessarily know what it means. A concept designer. Explain it to me as simply as you can, will you?
Well, first of all, we don't get to be called concept designers. That's a title too far. We're usually called concept artists.
Right.
And it ranges from being asked to come up with designs and ideas for concepts, in inverted commas, for everything that you see on screen in a film, it's particularly if it, you know, if it's a fantasy thing or thing that may not exist in real life. So that would be creatures, costumes sometimes, sets, environments, props, vehicles, basically anything that needs to be thought up of. Right at the beginning of a project, we get to come up with some ideas and designs, and then as the project progresses, it's more about illustrating designs, very often done by other people. Your job really is to use visuals to get a conversation about design going, and then occasionally you hit something that's exactly right and it will make it onto the screen, but not too often. I mean, Buckbeat for Harry Potter was unusual for me in that the production designer, Stuart Craig, asked me to take that on and just let me do it on my own. That went from quick sketches and then conversations with Alfonso Cuarón, the director, and then evolving the design and thinking about the design, and went so far as to, once it started to be honed and more towards what they finally wanted, I went into like the Royal Veterinary College and talked to the professors there about who happened to be Harry Potter fans, which was quite useful, about how this could work. And, you know, they said it can't work. You can't have six limbed creatures, but we'll do our best to figure it out. So it's everything from illustrating, coming up with ideas they don't want, to doing very finished designs for what ends up on screen and everything in between.
But it sounds like that, you know, when you say what they don't want, it sounds like that when you do get there, that it's your ideas that I'm seeing on the screen.
Sometimes, but the thing about film is very collaborative. So you hand your work down along a pipeline or a chain
of
creatives. And what happens is, if you work with really good sculptors and very good creatives, they take whatever you've done and they make it even better using the process that they do. And so you kind of have to hold your design a little bit lightly because it will change.
Oh, God, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. No expectations. Absolutely. Yeah. By the way, we're talking to Dermot Power from County Waterford. So I will ask the obvious question then. How did you get into this area, Dermot?
I was a comic book artist for 2000 AD. I went over to London to try to make my career as an illustrator and got pushed back all the time from illustration agencies saying my work was a bit too comic book looking. So then I just went, okay, I'll do that then. So I worked up for 2000 AD doing Slane and Judge Dredd and stuff like that for about 10 years. And then a director saw my work, Steve Barron, and he was doing the Merlin TV series for Hallmark, about 25 years ago. And he had seen my Slane artwork and he asked me to do some designs for his characters. Because the Slane story I was doing was an Arthurian legend and he was, you know, Merlin's obviously Arthurian. And so I did some stuff for that and I just really enjoyed the process. Although I learned some very valuable lessons immediately, which was, the designs that I did, the director really liked them and everybody said they really liked them. But then I soon found out that you have to be very respectful of the other departments because you'd step on everybody's toes. So I'm doing costume designs and doing character designs and doing visuals for sets. And I have no idea what the budgets for the sets are. And I don't know what the time schedules. I don't have that, all that stuff. So in some ways you have to ignore all that and just do what you do anyway, because you're feeding the director ideas. But at the same time, you have to be not expecting your design.
Of course, and be aware that everybody else has a say in it too, and they might have a bigger say than you, who knows. I mean, at the end of the 90s, did you kind of, do you just get work by getting work by getting more work? Or did you actually sort of go out looking for the Star Wars thing when you sent a portfolio to the...
Yeah, the Star Wars thing, I was just a massive fan and I didn't know anybody. I just sent my portfolio to the Slush Fund, really.
Mm.
I just sent it. I knew the PO box number for the Skywalker Ranch, and I just thought, well, I don't know anybody. I was so new to the industry. The thing is, if it was now, I wouldn't do it. I would have thought it was a hopeless thing to try and do, but I didn't know any better. So I sent it off, and it just happened that Doug Chang, who was heading up the art department over there, one of the concert artists, Ian McKay, was leaving, and they said, well, let's just get somebody to replace you. And they happened, so let's dig out the mound of portfolios and went through them. And Ian, they both liked my work. And
wow, that's just from sending in your portfolio. So the work you did in Merlin, the work you did then with Attack of the Clones, etc., it goes on to what? You send that in again, or somebody else comes across it and says, we need this for Harry Potter?
No, you can't. Well, what was fortunate, fortunate and unfortunate, is that Harry Potter and Star Wars arrived at the same time. Oh, and the designer, Stuart Craig of Harry Potter, wanted me to work on the first Harry Potter film, but I'd already committed to Star Wars, which is nice choices to have.
Yeah.
Nice worries to have. But so by the time I finished Star Wars, they were beginning to do the second Harry Potter film. And then I went and worked for Stuart. And once you're in the industry, you start to hear what's around, and you'll often work with the same production designers and as they move on to other projects. And so, yeah, I've done a lot of work with Stuart.
Well, then, like, specifically your creation, I'm sitting in the cinema and the movie's on. Is there anything from a well-known movie that we could point to and say, that's Dermot Power's work?
Well, if you watch the Harry Potter films, it would be Buckbeak.
Right, that's the hippogriff, yeah.
Hippogriff, yeah. And then the Wampin Willow, which is the tree.
From Harry Potter,
and
yeah.
And if you watch Star Wars, a lot of Natalie Portman's... I mean, I worked with Tricia Bigger, the costume designer. But a lot of what Natalie Portman is wearing, I did the original illustrations for. You know, it's not that often. You'll see things on screen that you had a big part
of
the journey to where it got to, but maybe you're not seeing exactly your shapes.
Well, you know, one person you haven't mentioned yet is Tim Burton and Alice in Wonderland. So you've worked quite closely with him and quite a lot with him. What's he like to work with?
I love working for him because he's an artist, he's an illustrator. Yeah. So there's been a push in the industry in the last few years to make things more and more realistic. And a lot of my stuff is quite photoreal. Whereas with Tim Burton, does not like very finished illustrations because he feels that there's no room for him to be creative afterwards. You know what I mean? It's like showing you, instead of a conversation about design, it's showing you a very finished looking design. He much prefers to see quick, minimalist kind of stuff. So when when I worked on Alice in Wonderland, he happened to own Arthur Rackham's studio in Belsize Park. And I worked upstairs in the attic. It was a kind of like a dream job with Tim downstairs in his office. So I was always very close by if I needed to talk to him. But actually, he's so busy once a film goes, gets going, he tends to just let me get on with it.
Well, then, hold on. That's two different things we've spoken about. Because if you go back to the late 80s and all the rest of it, video game cover artwork for Virgin Games, and then you mentioned the British Weekly Anthology 2000 AD with the fascist future cop Judge Dredd that a lot of people will know, and Slane as well. And then 97, Steve Barron, etc. But like, you know, was it easy to make the transition from comic book to film? What are the difference and other similarities in terms of the work?
The biggest advantage for me is that I went into comics because I saw fully painted artwork done by people like Simon Bisley. And I was hugely influenced by that. And that makes you a very slow I mean, it didn't make Simon Bisley slow, but it made me a very slow and broke comic artist. But by the time I came into film, I was that process of having to design everything on the fly and make up characters and paint them and color them and tell all the story, all that stuff is fantastic once you move over to film, because you're always thinking about story and the story of design and design narrative, if you like.
So would you be pulling shapes and colors from all over the place? Is that the point, from art movements and whatever?
I mean, yeah, you do have to, the most important thing to do is find out what the story is, but not just the script, the story of the thing that you're designing.
Yeah.
What motivates it, if it's a character, even if it's the Wampin' Willow, a tree, what makes it look like that? What makes a tree grow in a certain way? So it's all about narrative and story. And the other huge difference, though, which makes a lot of artists not suited to film, is you really have to leave your sense of self-worth and ego at the door, because the way directors communicate is as soon as you have fixed a problem for them, they're going to move on to the next thing they're worried about. They're not hanging around telling you you're great. Mm. And, you know, you're, oh, wow, I really love that. You only know you're doing good work because you get called back onto their next project. Whereas when you're a comic artist, you're fated. You go to a convention and you're the, you know, oh, look, Stern of Power, he did that comic. Whereas in film, it's you know, I do have a lot of people out in the industry who tell me they like my work, but you don't hear it so much from directors. When I worked for George Lucas on Star Wars, you'd be at a meeting with Lucas and you didn't speak. You would afterwards, but you weren't really encouraged to talk about your design. So it better be in the picture.
Yeah.
Because he was very quiet. He's actually kind of shy. So is Tim Burton, is kind of quiet. And once you've hit something, he'll move on to the next thing. He won't waste too much time.
And when do you come into the process? I mean, can it change a lot of the time? Like, do you ever just have a director and a script? And I'm sure you have that much at least.
That's the best time to be in it, but it often doesn't happen. And it actually, that's why I love working for Tim Burton, because he tends to ask me to get involved very early. And sometimes on films that he doesn't end up making. I mean, I spent 9 months designing Pinocchio, and then Tim decided not to make it. So I have 9 months work of just myself and the script and Tim.
But I'm sure when you start off doing something, you must know that an awful lot of the work you're about to do for the next few months will never even see the light, like, will never even survive.
It does survive, though, because we end up putting it on our websites. And you know, and we're, and officially, you're not really supposed to do that. But if, what we kind of do is, after a few years, if a film is dormant, and the film studios are really exercised in protecting films that are about to come out, or their products. But, you know, I've done work for projects that the only person who's seen it is the director, myself, and the producers sometimes. Once it's up and running there, you know, they want to do something with the concept art, then they're very protective of it. But yeah, there's a sort of gray area among concept artists that we need to wait until a film is long in the, you know, history, and then you can sort of...
Of course. And how involved is the director in what you actually do? Like, in other words, how much creative control do you have?
It really depends on the director. And, you know, with Tim, it's a it's a conversation. With other directors, I've worked on films where I'm just not connected with directors at all. Mm. And I've stood in, like, I remember when I first worked on Harry Potter, the second Harry Potter film, we had a couple of weeks designing Dobby, and I think I had about 20 designs up on the wall, and my friend Rob had about 10 designs, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of us. And the director, Chris Columbus, came in and didn't even look at my pictures, went straight for Rob's, which were amazing. His Dobby designs were amazing. And then you're kind of like, it's a little embarrassing, because they just ignore your work. So then we were all tasked with go off for another couple of weeks and do the next set of designs based on what Rob did. And so we did that. And then the director came in, looked straight past our designs and went straight to Rob's again, and you're like, oh, I give up.
Yeah, right.
I just couldn't connect.
But hold on, some of the people you've just mentioned there, you're in the room with them. That's about three or four you've mentioned. So do you meet usually? Is it over Zoom ever? Is there a lot of back and forth?
Zoom and the COVID has made everybody able to, you know, trained everybody to work from home.
Yeah,
but I was lucky that when I worked on Star Wars at the beginning of the 2000s, 1999, 2000, I worked from London, but then because they felt that this, we need to do face-to-faces, I had the absolute joy of staying at Skywalker Ranch for 2 weeks at a time, periodically, to have meetings with Lucas. I don't think that would happen now. So then you're in a room with him and it's like, you know, I'm a fanboy, so yeah. I was just in awe of that. So, but now, Tim Burton will ask me to come in to meet him because he's just not really into technology. So,
Think it, seeing his movies. Just tell us about the Skywalker Ranch. Is it cool?
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it is. There's a big house, and then where he has all the Star Wars memorabilia in glass cases and a library full of books and Maxfield Parrish original paintings, Norman Rockwell paintings, Howard Pyle paintings all on the walls. And then when you work in the art department, that's at the top floor and there's a lift. And this is like a joke, but it's true. You have a gold, gold color key. So when you go into the lift, if you remember the art department, you turn the key at the top button as a key, and that lets you into the art. That brings you up to the art department. So it's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It sounds very boastful, but it's just so dreamy.
Hold on a second. You spent a few weeks on that ranch and it sounds very boastful. You can boast all you like. There's nobody else that I know has spent time there. What films have you enjoyed working on the most?
I love working with Stuart Craig, who is the production designer of the Potter films, because he's just a genius. He's just a brilliant designer. And when you talk to him about design, although he will try to talk to you about design, but I find his ideas are so good that I'm just kind of waiting for to hear what he's got to say.
Yeah, Stuart Craig is the Potter films, yeah?
Yeah, he did all the Potter films. And I mean, he'd a shelf full of Oscars before he started them. So.
Yeah, he did Fantastic Beasts as well, didn't he?
Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he's a great designer. And obviously, I love working on the...
He's a great designer, is what you're saying. So, like, is that one of the reasons why you like being around the guy? Because if you think he's a bit of a genius and really good, you kind of riff off that. Is that it?
It's because you don't always have conversations about designer with designers.
Yeah.
Some designers work by blizzarding the director with loads of choice, loads of images. Here's 15 different versions of something. Whereas what Stuart tends to do is he'll show one picture. And what I learned from him is it's better to get it wrong and find out why it's wrong than show 10 different options and get the best of a bad lot. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, God, I didn't even think
there's no information there then.
I wouldn't have thought that was the question of wrong or right. It's just whatever. But I mean, like,
it's appropriate. Yeah, everything in film is about whether it's appropriate.
Of course, So the films that might have challenged you the most, like what has been very difficult?
As soon as you know what the story is, you're off to the races, if you know what I mean. That's all that matters. The most difficult ones is when the script isn't sorted out. And they don't. Okay, I was tasked with designing Kylo Ren for The Force Awakens, episode 7, Star Wars episode 7. And I could not really connect with J.J. Abrams. And I found that really difficult. I mean, I connected with him on a personal level. He's very, very funny. And he would come in and he'd have you cracking up. But it was very hard to get information out of him about what he wanted this character to look like. And I spent 3 months. And I have to say, if you looked at the quality of the designs I did, they went from the best designs at the beginning to the embarrassing ones.
Yeah,
because I lost track. I did not know what he wanted. And then one of the other concept artists, Glenn Dillon, who's a fantastic artist, he came in one day with just something completely out of nowhere. And JJ was like, oh, that's it. That's what I want. And with all the goodwill in the world, that's quite difficult.
But in terms of the word challenging, like in one of the most stimulating ways, must be like if you're working with Stuart Craig, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and then you go straight to Alfonso Cuarón, he wants the exact opposite. And you go, that's fantastic.
Oh, that way, yes, yes, that was, I've stood in front of the Hippogriff with Stuart asking me to make his chest feathers kind of a bluey gray, and Alfonso asking for them to be warm, a kind of a warm color, and both of them are saying it to me within a minute of each other, and they're nodding, and then you do your best. But then the most perfect example of that is the firebolt, Harry's broomstick, because that he gets from so when I talked to Stuart about that at the beginning, he said, let's just go for kind of a 50s thing, and I was a bit of a skateboarder years ago, so I was into this idea that this you'd have like wheels and trucks and decks for skateboards. You'd have this thing that you take apart, and it's got loads of different components, and you can take off the stirrups and you know that kind of thing. And then Alfonso came in, he went, no, I want a craggy,
all right,
like, it looks like it's an old.
So you went 50-50, did you?
I went 50-50, and if you look at that design, the bottom of it's craggy and the top is smooth.
Yeah,
him and
fantastic.
That was my solution. Was
a curvy top and a craggy kind of twisted thing knotted at the bottom.
Yes, yeah.
All right, so listen, finally, Dermot, what's next? What are you doing?
Right now I'm working on an Apple TV series called, based on, it, you know the Band of Brothers?
Yeah.
I don't know if this has been announced.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway,
okay.
I've been on it for 2 years.
For God's sake.
It's the next of the Band of Brothers type of things.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
It's come very, very different to what I normally do in that it's historical.
Yeah.
And so it's all visuals of, you know, it's not the most exciting work for me. And there's a couple of projects coming up that are not announced, and I'm not allowed to talk about them.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that the next time you come on to the programme, and it'll be a pleasure to have you on again. Dermot Power, as in Waterford man, Dermot Power. It's been a pleasure, Dermot. Thanks so much for talking with us, and good luck with the work that you're doing as concept artist.
Thanks very much, Dave. It's great chatting to you.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.